Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. I'm Ashley Kopovich, Regional Director at CREXI, and today's host. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics and conversations with featured experts to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news in commercial real estate. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome and thank you all for joining this episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a broad range of topics that cater to CRE newcomers and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Ashley Kopovich, Regional Director at CREXI. And today, we are thrilled to sit down with Daniel Tyner, Senior Director of JLL's Capital Markets Americas. A little bit about our guest. Daniel is a Senior Director in the Orange County office of JLL Capital Markets Americas. Mr. Tyner focuses on retail investment transactions in the Western United States and has been involved in over $2 billion in transaction volume since 2017. In 2023, he was named as one of the Connect CRE's Next Generation Award winners for California and is a member of ICSC's Next Generation Group for 2023. Mr. Tyner joined HFF in January 2017 and was a part of the merger with JLL in 2019. Prior to joining JLL, he worked for Coldwell Banker Commercial Advisors, where he specialized in the acquisition and disposition of retail properties throughout Southern California. He earned his bachelor's degree from the George Washington University School of Business. Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. We're so excited to sit down with you, and I'm sure our listeners are really interested to hear what you have to say. So thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem.
Of course, first topic. I know we just covered your background, gave us a little bit of insight into you, but we definitely want to dive a little bit deeper. So I want to hear briefly about your career path and some of the lessons that you learned along the way. So tell us more about where you're from and how you first got your start in commercial real estate.
Absolutely. Well, originally I grew up in Long Beach, California, so Southern California based. I wanted to go to school back east to get a new experience and see the East Coast. And quickly when I was there, I realized I don't love the cold weather and wanted to come back to Southern California. And obviously real estate is really big out here, especially in Orange County. So as I was kind of evaluating my next path post-college, real estate seemed like a great avenue to go into. And that's kind of what kickstarted my interest.
I love that. You and I are kind of the opposite, Dan. I'm originally from New Jersey and hated the cold with you as well, and then came out to LA here and, found real estate just as yourself. So glad that we're now in the same area. Who are some of your mentors kind of either earlier on in your career, first getting started, or maybe later on to this day? Kind of how did they shape your career path?
Sure. Well, originally when I was looking for my first job in real estate, trying to break in, I really didn't know. I didn't know what I didn't know, I guess is the best way to put it at that point. So luckily my uncle, who is based here in Newport Beach, was able to help me make some connections in the real estate world. And I landed my first job working for a guy at Coldwell Banker Commercial, who specialized in retail, and really kind of in that middle market, smaller sector of retail. And that's really how I got my start. And he, took me under his wing and kind of gave me, the first glimpse into real estate, which I'm very thankful for. And, throughout that, I was able to grow a little bit, and I met my current partner and mentor, Gleb Lavovich, who was at HFF at the time. And he recruited me to come over, and I'm still partners with him to this day at JLL. So that's, been a good 5-year run now, 6 years, I guess, now. And he's been a huge mentor and partner for me.
I love that. I mean, everyone, whether you're new to CRE or you know, people that are have been in it forever. Commercial real estate and real estate in general is all about those relationships and who you know. So talk to us a little bit about maybe some of the lessons that you learned early on, whether it was from your uncle or your mentor at CBC or your partner now, that have just generally become invaluable moving forward.
Well, I think, you know, specifically to the brokerage side, which is where I'm at today, I've learned that, you know, nothing is definitely easy, especially in markets like today. And really the way to be successful in this industry is to be persistent, be honest, be truthful with your clients, and, you know, really, you know, stand firm to that in every situation. I've definitely had mistakes happen along the way, whether it's transaction mistakes or just general mistakes in just the course of my career. But I think in those situations, that's where you really learn and grow. And it's helped me kind of understand, you know, how to get past those situations today if they do arise. But I'm still, you know, making mistakes to this day, learning, as in real estate, you know, there's no, you know, set way to do things sometimes, and every transaction is different. But you know, if over the course of the years, I definitely probably could have made some deals happen that I didn't at the time, just because I didn't know how to handle a situation. But that helped me get here today. So.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a minute ago some favorite mistakes. I love asking that question for people that are on our podcasts. Are there anything that you made that was a favorite mistake, so to speak, that kind of course corrected and you used either as a staple in your career to say, yes, this is something that I need to do or never do it moving forward? Give us a little insight into maybe one of those stories.
Sure. Favorite mistake. I don't know if I'd call it a favorite, but it definitely a learning mistake for me was, you know, we were engaged by a client to give them a proposal on a shopping center they owned here in the Inland Empire. And we ended up losing that to a competitor of ours. And, you know, I always like to go to the client and say, you know, hey, can you provide us any feedback on what we did well, what we did wrong, you know, why you chose to go a different direction. And, you know, the feedback they gave us was that essentially the other competitor of ours listened to their goals, was much more attentive to what they needed in the transaction and what they wanted. You know, mind you, this was a family partnership with, you know, multiple different people involved and different personalities. And, you know, unfortunately, on our end, we were really just focused on here's our background, you know, here's what we think we can sell the property for, here's how we're going to do it, and really didn't listen to what the client wanted and what their goals were and tried to relate to them. And I think we've taken that feedback and really changed our approach when it comes to pitching an assignment, especially when you have, you know, multiple people involved, whether it's a family partnership or there's different partners involved, there's always going to be different personalities, and you really have to understand what the client wants and what the client needs at that time. So again, I don't know if it's a favorite mistake, but it's definitely a learning mistake that we've taken and helped improve, you know, our team and our processes.
Wow. That is my favorite mistake from you guys. I think that was awesome. That just reminded me of so much. First and foremost, always ask for feedback, right? Salesman to salesman, right? Asking for feedback. Feedback is a gift. So understanding and having the wherewithal and self-awareness to say, where did I go wrong? I think that was so courageous of you guys just to even call and ask that. And second is really just a huge reminder again in sales. I think it's the quote that we have, you know, two ears and one mouth for a reason, right? And a lot of times we forget that and we just want to pitch ourselves and why we're the best so much when, you know, it is really about the client's goals and everything is going to be a little bit different and you can solve that. But just being listened to is huge. Sometimes to my clients, I even act like a therapist, right? Shout out to all the therapists that are listening here, maybe, or go to that. You know, people just want kind of an outlet to make sure that you're on the same page. Regardless, you probably would have got there anyways. But I think that's a huge reminder and kind of really almost a blessing in disguise. You know, maybe it was a mistake losing out on that deal, but probably an opportunity that, you know, as you said, just shaped the way that you guys do business and kind of your path moving forward. So that's just an awesome lesson and reminder. Sorry you had to go through the pain of losing that, but it's a good deal, a good learning lesson moving forward. So thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's helped us win more business, but at the moment it wasn't great.
Exactly. But, you know, I'm sure at the end of the day it helped win, you know, just going that extra mile and doing it. So really, really good takeaway for our listeners. Another thing, Daniel, that you mentioned is in your day-to-day being persistent, right? So what are some other fundamental tenets of your work ethic that you maintain today? So whether that's, you know, daily habits or practices, making a certain number of calls, or just from a mental health perspective, you know, meditating or gratitude, give our listeners a little bit of what you do on a day-to-day that makes you stand out.
Sure. Well, I think just in you know, my role on the transaction side, you know, that persistence, you know, is obviously key, but I think, you know, you have to be organized, right? And it's in our nature to be organized because you're working on multiple different transactions at one time, you're dealing with different clients, but at the same time, you're out prospecting for new business at the same time. So I think organization is key. And then at the same time, communication, right? Communicating with your clients, communicating with the seller, right? If you're marketing a property on behalf of a seller and there's, whether it's good news or bad news, you have to communicate up front and you got to get that out to them early. Especially if, you know, there's moving pieces happening in the transaction, you always have to communicate that. So, you know, I pride myself on both of those things. In terms of just daily tasks that I do that, you know, help me kind of stay organized is, you know, every day I come in and I have a list of prospects that I'm calling that I've scheduled ahead of time. So I'm, you know, scheduling, you know, my calls on a weekly basis. So I know when I come in on Monday morning, I know I'm calling these, you know, 50 people or these, you know, 60 people. And I don't have to think about it because it's already automated in a system I have. And I think that just helps efficiency, especially because I'm at the same time working on active transactions, whether they're in escrow or we're marketing them, there's always things you're doing. So having organization and a built out plan of what you're going to do that day ahead of time, I think is key, especially in our role.
Absolutely. If anyone on my team is listening, they've heard this a million times. Organization and planning is my utmost things. You have to do it. I say to every single person, client, team member, I'm a slave to my calendar. If it's not in there, I will not remember to do it. So it has to be booked in, from follow-up calls to planning out my day the night before, exactly that, never missing a beat, knowing exactly who you're going to call. So that's awesome. And Daniel, we'll talk about tools a little bit later. I don't want to give anything away, but is there any tools that help you with staying on top of organization or that communication to your clients? Obviously, that transparency is key. So don't want to jump the gun, but anything that you would give our inside listeners, anything, any recommendations?
Well, I mean, obviously, there's, you know, the general database tools that everyone uses to stay organized. But, you know, what I use is a platform called Salesforce, which essentially automates, you know, my tasks. It automates my calendar. It automates, you know, what I'm doing that day. And that's within JLL. It's a platform that we have that, you know, allows us to basically stay organized and have everything kind of in one place. But, you know, at the same time, in terms of communication, you know, I've seen a lot of people, especially in today's environment, really just use email. And I think that is good. But at the end of the day, you got to pick up the phone and call people and you got to communicate with your clients, you know, direct, and you got to go meet with people at the same time. So you can't just, you know, send emails and hope that that's going to work. You got to do kind of everything. And, you know, again, face-to-face meetings or, you know, calling people directly, you know, help further build the relationship and do it in a much quicker way.
For sure. Again, commercial real estate, everything in general, that face-to-face, that relationship building is definitely key. Shameless plug with Crexie. I'm sure you showcase, you know, all the transparency from the leads to your clients and obviously what's up with their deals. But love that you're keeping the calendar and then have that CRM to stay organized. Definitely think that that's a key for maintaining everything that you have going on in one day, essentially.
Absolutely.
So second topic, moving kind of more into the nuts and bolts of today, commercial real estate landscape. We'd love to ask some more questions about the state of retail in general. So give us a 30,000 foot overview of the retail market today, maybe what differences you see in different operator types, things like that. Give us your kind of bird's eye overview, if you will.
Sure. Well, just little history. So from a retail perspective, when I came into the business back in 2017, 2018, you know, retail was highly challenged, right? There was bankruptcies, there was tenants that, you know, you didn't think were going to make. You fast forward that into, you know, COVID, and everyone thought, oh, retail is dying. You know, tenants aren't going to make it. And, you know, coming out of COVID through today, retail has really bounced back in a tremendous way. And we've seen a surge in not only retail performance, but investor performance in the retail sector. So, you know, you look at today, obviously there's some more macro market conditions and headwinds we're dealing with just from a cost of borrowing standpoint. But retail itself, the fundamentals are as strong as ever. Leasing activity has been on fire basically in the last 18 to 24 months. And, you know, investor interest is at an all-time high, especially today with the cost of borrowing. You have retail is one of the few sectors where you can get positive leverage and cash flow day one, whereas some of the other asset classes, like multifamily and industrial, have had really aggressive pricing. And with the cost of debt where it is today, it makes it challenging to work. And then obviously the office sector has had their, you know, kind of issues coming out of COVID. So we on the retail side have been kind of riding this wave, and it's been solid. And retail, I would say, has never been in a better position than it is today.
I love to hear that. Are there any subsectors that are thriving more than others, or some where you see more conservatively positioned?
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost, the grocery anchored sector of retail is by far everyone's, you know, favorite. And, you know, I think it's the one that is performing the best today. And strip retail, right? Food and service, that has been a huge you know, driver of not only, you know, traffic to properties, but also, you know, rents for those type of tenants have continued to increase over the past couple of years. I'd say on the more conservative side, obviously, you know, the movie theater sector has, you know, had their challenges, and then as has fitness, but that's been coming back. But overall, I think people in today's world are really focused on grocery anchored, strip retail, and food and service.
I completely agree. Dan, I have to ask, Barbie or Oppenheimer? You brought up movie theaters. It's on my mind.
I honestly don't know much about both. Just to be totally transparent, let's go with Barbie.
Yes! I was hoping you would say that. No, I'm just kidding. A lot of people are saying that they're going to go see a double feature, and people have sort of mapped out their schedule of what they're doing. So hopefully that'll bring some dollars into the movie theaters, but I'm definitely Team Barbie for sure.
Yeah. Anything to get people to go to movie theaters. I'm all about it.
Exactly. There's so much publicity, at least here. I mean, I'm not sure if you see it down in Orange County, but in LA, there's like a Barbie house, and then there's a pink car that's driving around LA. They're trying to do a lot of hype for it. So we'll see. We'll see how it does.
I love it. That's awesome.
It is. It is. So let's dive in. What's happening on the West Coast compared to the national retail market? Are there any key differences that make the Western market stand out, and why, in your opinion?
I don't think on a macro scale anything is super different on the West Coast than it is nationally from a retail perspective. What we have on the West Coast is obviously, you know, Southern California, Northern California. We have extremely high barriers to entry from a development standpoint. New construction for retail has been really slow as compared to maybe some of the other sectors, especially like the Sun Belt, where there's been a ton of growth and new development down in those areas. I would say, obviously, California has always been a super attractive place to invest from a retail standpoint, not only retail, but just real estate in general, due to the appreciation that you get in California as compared to some other parts of the country. But overall, I mean, I think the West Coast has generally been a great place for people to invest. Most of our clients are owning not only, you know, nationally or just in Southern California, but up and down the West Coast, which is why we cover all those markets. But, you know, I would say that retail in general is performing well in all scales on a national basis.
Perfect. Love to hear that. How's the retail sector evolved over the last 5 to 10 years? I know you were talking a little bit about before COVID, during, and how retail's obviously just been booming over the last 18 to 24 months. So give us a little bit of difference between 5, 10 years ago, now. What's different? What's the same? Maybe new buyers, new sellers, developers that weren't in the space traditionally before. Give us kind of your insight there.
Sure. So, you know, when I, again, came into the business, you know, years ago, the word I kept hearing was experiential, right? Everyone wants experiential retail. That's going to drive traffic to, you know, the retail sector. That's going to drive traffic to the properties. And that, you know, narrative, while it exists today, it's kind of faded. And it's become more necessity, right? Necessity retail is really what has been performing. So, as I mentioned, the grocery sector, the service, the food, that's really what has been, I guess, the major change in retail over the course of the last, you know, few years, because people don't, while experience is great, it's not going to drive daily traffic. And that's really what, from a retail standpoint, you need. So I would say that's been the biggest change that I've seen is really more focused on necessity, food and service, and grocery. In terms of new, you know, entrants into the market, you know, retail is very privately owned. So, you know, we're constantly working with, you know, various family offices, private individuals, high net worth investors, alongside institutional investors. So, you know, we're constantly seeing new people, you know, show up on deals, look at new properties that we have. And, you know, it's great because some of them are, you know, selling out of multifamily and they're buying retail and they are, you know, moving into the sector. So I'd say there's always newcomers into the retail sector. And that's been great for us to track.
That's awesome. And kind of a nice segue into my next question for you. So what would you say separates retail from the other markets? So you mentioned multifamily industrial previously. So what is separating out retail? Why is it seeing such a success post-pandemic, you know, as opposed to, let's say, multifamily industrial and other asset types?
Well, I think what we've seen is, you know, as mentioned, you had industrial and multifamily, you know, at the peak of the market, 2021, 2022, at record high pricing, very aggressive. And essentially that has helped retail today because retail has always been, you know, priced less aggressively, probably 100 to 150 basis points higher than multifamily and industrial. And when the cost of debt has gone up significantly over the past, you know, 6 to 9 months, it's helped us because, you know, we can get positive cash flow, positive leverage day one. So that's really what separated us from the multifamily and industrial sector and made retail attractive. And then at the same time, office has been pretty challenging to invest in, just given what's happened with that sector coming out of COVID. So I guess for better or for worse, retail has been the beneficiary of some of the challenges in the other sectors, and it's kind of helped bring more people to invest in retail.
For sure. Absolutely. So take strong on that. Do you have any surprising or controversial thoughts about the current market happenings that you would like to share?
Controversial? I don't know. I would tell you that, you know, clients are constantly asking us, you know, what's happening with rates? Are they going to come down? Where is pricing going? And, you know, we unfortunately don't have a crystal ball. It's tough to predict and tough to understand. I think, you know, everyone today is expecting at some point rates to come down and, you know, for pricing to improve at some point. But when that happens, you know, who knows? But, you know, we're just taking it day by day.
Absolutely. If you and I had a crystal ball, you know, we'd definitely be in a different position than where we are. But I think that was just as close as we probably could get. What are your primary considerations as you advise clients through the current economic times? So as people are coming to you, maybe asking some of these questions or other ones, you know, what are you telling them is the long-term upside? What are their current obstacles? Any specific advice that you hear yourself saying over and over?
I think, you know, I guess speaking to the sellers, right? I'm advising sellers, unless there's an absolute need to sell today, I don't necessarily think this is the best time. Just given some of the headwinds and the difficulties in the capital markets, you're not going to get as much attention. You're not going to have as large of a buyer pool, and you're probably not going to get to the pricing that you may have gotten, you know, a year and a half ago. From a buyer perspective, I think there's opportunity, right? Because you're seeing pricing, you know, decline from the peaks of the market. So that same property that, you know, we took out a year and a half ago is, you know, probably 50 basis points higher minimum, maybe a little less than that. So I think it's an opportunity from a buyer standpoint to, you know, buy today versus, you know, the peak of the market prior. But it's tough, right? It's tough to make that bet today from a buyer's perspective, just given there's so many headwinds. You know, we think rates are going to continue to go up, and the cost of debt has just skyrocketed since, you know, 2021.
For sure. Appreciate that insight. And thank you for giving us both the buyer and the seller different perspectives there. So switching into a third topic, and given your technical background and expertise, I'm sure our listeners are curious about your answers to a few rapid fire / words of advice questions. Are you game for that?
I am. Let's do it.
Okay, perfect. So first one, if you were given $50 million today and had to invest it immediately, what would your go-to asset type and location be and why?
Well, obviously I know retail, so that makes it easier for me to invest in that type of product. If I had $50 million, I like Southern California because I believe that from an appreciation standpoint, it's the best in the country. So, you know, what I like about retail is generally positioned in the best locations, right? It's at main and main intersections. It's, you know, generally in the densely populated areas because that's really how retail, you know, thrives. So when I look at the future of real estate, especially in some of these larger markets where you're seeing a lot more mixed use type product and multifamily product that's coming in to, you know, kind of feed the, you know, housing need that many different cities have, I think retail is very well positioned because it's located in the best corners and that land value is always going to be highly attractive. So I, as, you know, a 31-year-old don't need, you know, to hit a home run tomorrow, right? I'm looking in, you know, 10, 15 years down the line. So I would be buying the best corners, best shopping centers with a ton of land. And, you know, banking on in the future there being, you know, more mixed use development to come in and perhaps densifying the project in the future.
I love that. Daniel, let's get $50 million and then we'll chat.
Let's do it.
We'll invest together. Perfect. Second rapid fire question, and I promise this is not a trick question. I already kind of gave it away myself earlier on. But what is your favorite tool or software that you use on the job?
Outside of Crexy?
Whatever you want to say.
Okay. Well, I mean, I kind of touched on it earlier, but Salesforce for me. It's really been a tool that I use on a daily basis. It's an organization tool, and it also just allows me to automate my tasks, my day-to-day, you know, needs of what I'm doing, and kind of have everything in one place. So that's what I'm familiar with. I'm sure there's many other tools that other people use that are great, but that's just something that I've gotten comfortable with and found success in.
Perfect. Everyone needs some sort of CRM, record keeping book, keep yourself organized. Absolutely. So I love that. Thank you for sharing. And then third rapid fire question, what is the most common misconception about either your job or the industry in general?
I mean, I think real estate, you know, has generally an easy barrier to entry, meaning, you know, anyone can go get a real estate license and, you know, start in real estate. But I think the misconception is that anyone can do it and, you know, anyone can kind of come into this role, build a client base and, you know, be successful. And I think it takes a lot of time. And, you know, what I was taught when I was, you know, first trying to break into real estate was 80% of the people don't make it in real estate. They maybe start in real estate and then after a few years they move into, you know, a different sector or a different industry because it's just very challenging. So I think from that perspective, that's probably the biggest misconception, just because people think there's, you know, an easy barrier to entry and you can, you know, come in and do it. But it's very much the opposite of that.
I couldn't agree more. Going back to the thing that you said in the onset is about that persistence. You know, it'll definitely take you a couple of years before you see some success. So the people that really grind and make it through it, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, but it is sometimes really hard to get in. So, you know, as you said earlier, making sure the right people are around you, using those mentors, going out, meeting those people face to face. I think that's so important. And, you know, from the investment side, right? You know, as you said, depending on your age and things like that, do you want to win a home run? Do you want to hold on to something? Again, it's not all success overnight, even if you're buying property too. So I think that is a key on both sides of the fence there. Perfect. So any last parting words before we wrap up? Anything that you want to share with our listeners, our audience, words of wisdom, parting advice? Let's hear it.
I don't know if I'm an expert at advice. I would just say, you know, I always think back to, you know, me trying to break into the industry. And, you know, I would say to, you know, maybe the younger generation or people trying to break into real estate that, you know, people respect, you know, not only persistence, but they respect kind of hustle. And that's really what you need in this industry. So I would say to anyone who's trying to break in, you know, don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call someone that you see is in the industry or call someone that you have seen, you know, have some level of success in whatever field they're in, because ultimately people respect that. And that's really the way to separate and differentiate yourself, you know, in any situation, right? I mean, we get, you know, thousands of resumes of people wanting to, you know, apply and work at, you know, JLL or whatever large company, and it's tough to differentiate. So going, you know, out of your way and being persistent and, you know, doing things a little bit differently goes a long way.
I love that. The cold call is not dead.
It is not dead.
I was reading an article earlier today and it said so many people in sales have call reluctance, and you kind of just even said it about, you know, applying for a job, you know, but I think it's the same whether you're trying to call on buyers, investors, you know, clients that you want to get, or even just your job, right? Set yourself apart, show a little bit of your personality, pick up the phone and make that relationship. I think some people have lost that. And And, you know, we get a ton of emails, even texts now I'm getting from certain brands and, you know, things like that. So picking up the call is definitely not lost. So a really, really good reminder for us.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Daniel, for joining us. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. I know you're very busy and we appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us. Where can people find you online if they want to get in touch? Email, social media, give it to us.
Yeah, email daniel.tyner@jll.com and then LinkedIn, just Daniel Tyner on LinkedIn. I try and stay active on there and, you know, would love to chat with more people.
Perfect. You heard it here, everyone.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexi.com/podcast. That's go.crexi.com/podcast and sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexi podcast on your favorite podcast app. Or check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/Crexi for video recordings of each episode. Goodbye, stay well, and we'll see you next time.